Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, December 7th, 2020. The Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council is calling on Ethiopian authorities to open humanitarian corridors in Tigray.
We're not supposed to only give assistance, we're also supposed to shield people from abuse. We have not been able to do that. There's been no humanitarian work happening in Tigray now.
And lecturers at the University of Juba have stayed for 8 months without salaries.
The family will give pressure to their people who are teaching at the university because they will say, you are a professor, you are a senior lecturer at the University of Juba, and you cannot even afford a single food for your family. What kind of profession are you trying to venture in?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials from the Norwegian Refugee Council are calling on the Ethiopian government to grant access to humanitarian aid agencies trying to reach the conflict region of Tigray to provide help to internally displaced persons. Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council says there is acute shortage of food, medicine and other relief service in the area. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
John Egland, the NRC Secretary General, who has been on a field visit to Umrakuba refugees camp in Sudan, says 8 convoys are on a standby, ready to move into Tigray and support families in urgent need of aid assistance. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via a messaging app in Khartoum, Egland says access to the Tigray region will mean access everywhere, including internally displaced persons and Eritrean refugees living in the Tigray's camps. He describes the situation as very difficult, adding that most refugees are already traumatized from the conflict they have witnessed in the region.
We're not supposed to only give assistance, we're also supposed to shield people from abuse. We have not been able to do that. There's been no humanitarian work happening in Tigray now since the beginning of the conflict because our staff on the ground, including the 90 NRC workers there, have been caught in crossfire themselves.
Egland says nearly 10,000 people have already transited to Umrakuba refugee camp, where NRC is on the ground providing assistance. He says the camp reached full capacity late last week, but refugees continue to arrive hungry, thirsty, and in need of shelter. Egland says the NRC has set up a temporary school in the camp where more than 700 refugee students are attending classes with the help of refugee teachers.
They said they would not return unless there was a clear protection of civilians and the violence had ended. So at the moment, we're doing our best to scale up humanitarian relief for all of the people coming in the refugee camp Umrakuba, where Norwegian Refugee Council is operational.
According to the international law, people fleeing violence must be allowed to move to areas of safety and security, including to neighboring countries like Sudan, where they can access the assistance they need to survive. The NRC official says there are already nearly 50,000 Ethiopian refugees who crossed the border into Sudan, and the number could reach 100,000 refugees within the next 5 months if the conflict continues in the Tigray region.
What we hope is that the international community will be able to invest in a real, sustainable humanitarian operation that can also bring a durable solution so that these are not sitting in a camp in the future. They are either integrated in livelihoods in the region where they are or are able to return.
Egland says the refugees' return should always need to be voluntary and it needs to be a place where there is a protection of civilians.
They need to work for peace and reconciliation in Ethiopia and elsewhere on the Horn of Africa, that they need to do all they can through that diplomacy and through being donor nations, so that we as humanitarian groups can do effective humanitarian work, have access to all people in need, but also to see how we can do better protection of civilians.
Thousands of newly arrived Ethiopian refugees have remained close to the border in the hope of crossing back into Tigray for the harvest or to recover some of their belongings. Sudan already hosts more than 3 million displaced people while in the midst of an economic crisis. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The Vice Chancellor of the University of Juba says lecturers have not been paid salaries for the last 8 months. Some lecturers at the university say they are unable to provide resourceful services to students due to low morale. A professor receives over 500,000 South Sudanese pounds, and a technician at the university earns 100,000 South Sudanese pounds per month. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
Avram Kwolnyun, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Juba, says he has not been paid his salary since March this year. Nyun says he is going through challenges of trying to feed his family.
The family will give pressure to their people who are teaching at the university, because they will say, you are a professor, you are a senior lecturer at the University of Juba, and you cannot even afford a single food for your family. What kind of profession are you trying to venture in? And as a result of this, professors, lecturers, assistant lecturers at the university will get pressure from the community. And I think those are the number of the effects that will have. And when they have not settled mentally, it means they could not be able to reason well and prepare a good material that will be delivered to the students.
Another lecturer, Hamid Morgan, who teaches economics at the University of Juba, says salary delays could discourage lecturers and prompt them to quit the teaching profession.
Most lecturers have to hustle around and try to find their way to be. This one actually may discourage people from the teaching profession, what I know. Because some people of us, like us now, I think we have almost to get another profession. Even if it's easy, one cannot really fit in properly there. So we have to find other coping mechanisms. Professors have become perhaps business people, others are hustling left and right, and that is how they survive. But the situation is actually not good.
In the statement dated December 4th, the Vice Chancellor of the University of Juba, Professor John Akech, said the lecturers have not been paid salaries for the last 8 months. Akech appealed to the Ministry of Higher Education to clear the arrears. A public university lecturer used to receive a salary equivalent to about $150 per month. But a recent salary structure for public university lecturers, approved by the Council of Ministers in July last year, increased lecturers' wages to 500,000 South Sudanese pounds, a technician hence over 100,000 South Sudanese pounds. Nyawir Mayen Achwil, the lecturer in the School of Journalism, Media and Communication Studies, says if lecturers are not paid on time, it will affect the quality of education at higher institutions of learning throughout South Sudan.
We are making our own ways of survival because you are renting, like for me personally, I'm renting an apartment. The government is not providing houses to lecturers. There were few spaces, and those few spaces are now occupied by even non-staff, and it is hard to remove them from those places. And so many of us, we are renting. And the second thing is like we don't even have transport. So you make your way to go to class and be lecturing. So all of this, in addition to personal or family responsibilities.
South Sudan has 5 public universities, which include the University of Juba, Dr. John Garang University of Science and Technology in Bor, Rumbek University, the University of Har El-Ghazal in Wau, and Afar Nile University in Malakal. This program was not able to reach the Ministry of Higher Education for explanation for the salary delays. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Kumasi in Ghana, where polls have opened today with voters deciding whether to keep President Nana Akufo-Addo or bring back former President John Mahama. While survey shows the incumbent is likely to retain power, Akufo-Addo's party is expected to lose seats in parliament. Stacey Nott spoke to voters as they cast their ballots in this report from Accra.
At polling stations across the nation, lines had already formed before polls opened at 7 a.m. local time. There are more than 17 million registered voters this year, with more than 33,000 polling stations. A pre-election survey from the Ghana Centre for Democratic Development found voters concerned about infrastructure, unemployment, and education. While there are 12 presidential candidates, the major contenders are incumbent President Akufo-Addo of the New Patriotic Party, NPP, and former President John Mahama of the National Democratic Congress, NDC. Student Nkonim Amo-Mensa went with her mother to a polling station at the University of Ghana. She was excited to vote and made up her mind on which candidate she supports within the last week. She is one of 2.63 million potential first-time voters.
I considered experience in the field, I mean, in the leadership field, and then what's in the campaign message, so what they have for children, adults, they have for people, underprivileged people.
Her mother, a teacher, was considering the education policies of the parties and how that helps her extended family. Educational issues were mentioned by several people who spoke to VOA at the polls. The NPP administration had introduced free senior high school, which the party campaigned heavily on. Emmanuel Osabuti was waiting for lines to thin out at a polling station in Medina, an area of Accra where many people are of limited means. He was voting to keep Akufo-Addo.
Because of the free senior high school that he has introduced, and I think it's a good idea. It is a good idea. It's a policy that will educate Ghanaians. So a time will come, let's say 10 years, 20 years to come, we'll have more Ghanaians be educated.
Umar Farik Mohammed, a graduate nurse, was waiting to vote at a polling station that had seen violence in a 2019 by-election. This year, those waiting to vote said peace would reign. Mohammed said he was voting for Mahama's NDC, as the party had a female running mate and he wanted to see her win. He said the party had good health care, education and gender development policies.
For the first time we are seeing that in Ghana, and I'm so much happy to see that. And I think it is a cause worth supporting. And that's when I made up my mind for the presidential election.
He was also hoping an NDC parliamentary candidate, a well-known actor in Ghana, would win. Ahead of the election, Mahama and Akufo-Addo signed a peace pact committing to non-violence regardless of the outcome of the vote. On Sunday night, in a televised address to the nation, Akufo-Addo said the world was looking to Ghana today to further solidify its democratic credentials. He urged people to vote in what he said would be a peaceful, fair and transparent election. Gilbert Tativi, an election worker at a polling station set up at a police car park in Accra, said there were fewer voters compared to the last election so far. However, he expected more to come later in the day.
4 years ago, we had a crowd, and it was a bit in the earlier stages. It was a bit difficult controlling them, but so far so good here. I mean, the number has gone down. People have behaved themselves orderly, and we have no problems yet. So it's been good.
He also pointed to the new COVID-19 protocols. The Electoral Commission introduced COVID-19 ambassadors to ensure mask wearing, hand washing facilities and temperature checks. The Electoral Commission has said it will aim to have results declared within 24 hours of closing. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a coalition of civil society groups in Sudan urge the country's leaders to form a parliament. Find out why.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you know any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go in and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we joined, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A coalition of civil society groups is upset by a decision of the Sovereign Council and the cabinet in Sudan to amend the constitutional document. Nabil Adib, head of the Confederation of Civil Society Organizations, says the Legislative Council is the only body mandated to amend the constitutional document. The coalition is calling for urgent formation of a Legislative Council to avoid any constitutional vacuum in the country. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
An umbrella group of 22 Sudanese civil society groups say the decision to amend the constitutional document in October by the Cabinet and the Sovereign Council contradicts the provisions of the constitutional document which guides the transitional government. Speaking during a press conference at the state-owned Sudan News Agency on Sunday, Nabil Adib, who heads the coalition, says the decision to include the Comprehensive Peace Agreement into constitutional document is illegal.
There was no need for the peace agreement to be incorporated into the constitutional document unless it's done in accordance with the constitutional document itself. And this does not mean the peace agreement will remain unimplemented until it is incorporated. Instead, it will continue to exist, rule, and be obligatory to the transitional authority.
Both the government and the armed groups incorporated the Juba Peace Agreement into the constitutional document in mid-October. Adib says that both the transitional government and the armed groups that signed the Juba peace deal would have allowed the agreement and the constitutional document to be implemented simultaneously until the Legislative Council is formed. He insists the procedure is illegal, adding that the constitutional document is the supreme law of the land during the transitional period.
Up to now, the constitutional document and the constitutional act are still effective, and it is within the mandate of the constitutional court to abolish the amendments.
Sousan Shueya, a member of the Civil Society Coalition, says the move to challenge Sudan's cabinet and sovereign council is a constitutional right. Shueya says civil society groups are also concerned about the peace and stability in Sudan.
We too care about the constitutional document, rights and peace. We fully support the peaceful Sudan, but what we are saying that the procedure that has been taken to incorporate the peace deal in the constitutional document is not acceptable to us.
Shueya called on the government and the armed groups to establish a legislative council to avoid any further constitutional vacuum in the country.
We look forward for an urgent completion of the transitional institutions, including the legislative council, other related commissions, so that we are able to build a state of law that we have been dreaming of.
The Confederation of Civil Society in Sudan is a group of rights groups working to promote human rights, freedoms, peace building, and good governance in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Yaounde, where lawyers in Cameroon declared indefinite strike to protest what they call government's interference in their profession. The stop work action, which follows a 5-day strike last week that got no government response, means courtrooms across the country will remain closed until a deal is struck. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaounde.
On Only the hissing noise of air conditioners was heard at the usually busy full courtroom in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé on Monday. 42-year-old teacher Magnus Anong says he is witness to a case concerning his younger brother. He says he found a locked courtroom.
My brother was intercepted by the police for rape, and we believe he is innocent. We have been expecting justice to be rendered here at the court of first instance, but no lawyer is present. See for yourself, court doors are locked. This is very terrible. I don't know how much time he will spend again awaiting trial.
The Cameroon Bar Council held an initial 5-day strike last week to protest an incident on November 27 in the city of Douala. The Bar Council says security forces tried to intervene in a case there, accusing lawyers of corruption. When the lawyers insisted that police leave the courtroom, the police attacked them with tear gas. Evaristus Mofo is president of the Bar Council's General Assembly. He says lawyers will not attend court sessions to protest what he says is the maltreatment of lawyers by the government.
It is the persecution of lawyers in Cameroon. Their rights have been violated. You know of the events that took place in Douala when the courtroom was invaded by armed uniformed people and lawyers were beaten up. Lawyers who are supposed to carry out their activities independently and in a liberal manner are seen to be pushed here and there. We have to tell the world that all is not well.
After the Douala incident, two prominent attorneys, including human rights lawyer Richard Tamfu, were arrested on charges of violence and corruption. They were released after pressure from the Bar Council. The Bar Council also asked the government to let lawyers do their jobs without further interference. Lawyers say they are often denied access to clients in detention centers and accuse the government of extracting confessions from suspects through the use of torture and inducements. Mofo says the government did not respond, triggering what he calls an indefinite strike. Mofo says the consequences will be heavy for the government and those seeking justice.
In criminal matters, especially felonies, where an accused person risks an imprisonment term of life or capital punishment, the assistance of counsel is mandatory. And once the counsel is not there, the matter has to be adjourned. And if this is done several times, that tantamounts to delay. And justice delayed is justice denied.
When contacted by a reporter, a government spokesperson declined to comment on the strike. Political analyst Eric Matthias Ewonangini of the University of Yaoundé says relations between the government and lawyers have always been sour. He says the government should open up to dialogue to solve problems with lawyers.
The process of law and justice should not be captured by political interests. The state should be able to listen at what the lawyers are asking. But at the same time, the lawyers should be aware of the fact that they don't need to be instrumentalized by political parties.
Nguini's comment is a reference to a meeting last month between a group of lawyers and opposition leader Maurice Kamto. Kamto, himself a lawyer, insists he won the October 2018 presidential elections in Cameroon and his victory was stolen by long-serving President Paul Biya. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And here in the United States, some Africans in Africa hear about the United States. All they think about is good life and a land full of opportunities compared to their countries of birth. However, there are challenges once they arrive in the United States. Daybreak Africa reporter Maureen Ojiambo arrived recently in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and asked some African immigrants to share some of their experiences and challenges.
Living in different states of the United States of America, talk about the achievements, but also the challenges living in the U.S. Most of them caution fellow countrymen not to consider relocating to the United States unless they can sustain themselves financially. Jacqueline Makoha is a medical officer working in Houston, Texas. She moved to the U.S. 20 years ago from Kenya after securing a scholarship. She worked with the Kenya Pipeline as a motor vehicle technician while at the same time playing volleyball for the Kenya national team. Makoha moved to the U.S. to study in the medical field because she says there are better job opportunities than playing volleyball.
From Kenya, I was doing motor vehicle wiring because I worked for Kenya Pipeline, and I was doing more of motor vehicle wiring and, you know, fixing on vehicles. So when I got here, I didn't see any course in the school that was going towards what I had back home. So kind of I quickly had to adjust. I went into healthcare, so that's basically where I've been up to today.
Most Africans have decided to use social media applications such as WhatsApp and Facebook groups to meet each other, especially those who come from same country, a move that some of them say has made them feel at home. But Jacqueline says she has never adjusted completely to the life in the U.S. when it comes to food. She has been growing some African vegetables in her backyard.
When I got here, I think we had so many differences, barrier with language, food. So most of the time, I'll carry my own spices from home. I'll carry my own tea from home. And since then, I've just maintained the same trend up to today. Eating vegetables here kind of was a challenge for me. So I decided to make my own garden in my backyard. Got some seeds from a friend who had started planting cowpeas.
Remigio Usai is a Zimbabwean postdoctoral fellow at Marquette University and living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Having lived in the U.S. for 9 years, Remigio says he is better off in the United States than Zimbabwe because there are more opportunities in the U.S. But he says there are challenges when you are not a permanent resident of the United States.
There are so many opportunities in the United States, and I like the fact that if you stay committed, you definitely achieve your dream. In my area of research, a lot of funding is available to study many interesting scientific phenomena. One of my biggest challenges for my first 6 to 7 years was missing my family. They were back home.
Jacqueline Makoha, however, discourages her fellow Kenyans from relocating to the U.S. without financial stability.
With the current situation, I will not advise anyone to come here just looking for greener pastures. Things have really changed around with the current political situation. It's really difficult for someone even just to find a job.
Personally, I've found it difficult adjusting to things like the culture and weather since arriving in the United States in August this year. The weather in Wisconsin is extremely cold. I am gradually getting used to it, but I have found a few stores that sell ingredients for African foods. However, I share the experiences of both Jacqueline and Remigio that life in the United States can be easy if you are a legal resident, but challenging if you are not. Reporting for VOA, I am Moreno Jembo in Milwaukee, USA.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Kulium Dushman by Emmanuel Kembe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap. Practice social distancing and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.